top of my head, I remember particularly looking at
it, is they left the coax cable, the far ends of it, open at the base of the antenna. They had a, in other words, your coax cable from your radio
wire that drops down
directly to cover the one.
Eventually has showed
electrified, you know, have life excluding capacity.
Coax cables that were
fields went to ground,
a ground rod driven in the ground.
Far ends of the coax were left open, Dick.
Okay, the shields went to a ground rod right at the base of the ground plane. Did the center conductors connect to the ring of the ground plane antenna system, and the far ends were left open? And by them being a quarter wave long electronically, the open circuit becomes a short circuit. And yes, you have electronically made something that is physically 66% of 135 feet. You now made it, I'm going to pick a number, 90 some odd feet or whatever it is, 66% is. And yes, it is now a resonating structure at 160 meters. And yes, it will have some ground plane quality to it. But still, you're going to end up lighting up quite a bit of dirt with your RF energy. And dirt is rather lossy. And when we measure pattern, when we measure standing wave ratio, in both cases on that antenna, you'll get a beautiful number and you'll think everything's hunky-dory. It's a lot more difficult to measure radiation efficiency. To take a field strength reading at some given distance, at some given altitude, to find out of the 100 watts you put into the antenna, how many watts is really radiated into that direction the way you want it to. That's a difficult measurement, I'll admit it. But if you do it, you're going to be disappointed. The raw materials that go into this antenna are not super expensive, so go ahead and run the experiment. But I would also strongly consider modeling it, or talk one of your friends who's got modeling experience into modeling the antenna, because that's going to be the quickest way that you're going to be able to make a prediction, knowing what your local soil conductivity is like. And there's ways you can find that out. You can make a prediction ahead of time what the efficiency is going to be. I'm a little bit afraid the antenna is going to have efficiency quite a bit lower than you'd like. Maybe that's good enough, because it's not a big investment. But I think there are better antennas, and I'm not super convinced that this coax technique is a great way to go. What is the testimonial on that? In other words, have 50 people built that coax ground plane radial type antenna, and are 49 of them saying, this is really fantastic and I love it? What is the track record of that antenna? Is there a way of finding that one out, Mel?
Repeater.
K2KEY. K2LIW.
Derivation of this antenna, there was a whole experiments that were done some years, 160 meter and 80 meter antennas, and basically they called it very fascinated by it. So I have a 160 meter dipole up here. It takes up a lot of territory for great neighbors that live. Derivation was actually was called, the best way they were referred to as the T, like a T. It's got a flat top wire up there, then wire that drops down behind for coaxial type wire, coax wire, as the array. In fact, that was the whole basis of this end. The thing that did get a lot of people on 160, especially out in California. The big problem, they were coming up with all kinds of ideas how to get on 160. There's not enough space in most homes that are Los Angeles and all property sizes. So I believe that's where the antenna was, that full antenna. Not much was heard of those, I think, on the East Coast.
Okay, let me ask you this question, Mel. What percentage of the people who live in Brooklyn do you think have enough real estate to set up that antenna as the article indicated? Go ahead.
Point. In fact, I believe I'm the only person idea, because the only way I can judge this is because these county hunters, they got certain differences. They're called, you know, county hunters and all. They're, hear me on occasionally, and I, a couple of times I have pile-ups on me, and I'm saying, what in the heck would, you know, somebody, why would so many people, well, they see, they would check me on, you know, they see county, some heard on one county, so very possible that I may be sort of a, the idea is that the top wire, supposedly, you stretch it as much as you possibly can, and that top hat or whatever, and then
compensated with the wire coming down. In other words, situation where you're hyper vertical, Dick. Possibility is that the results out of such an antenna applicable to other bands, I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to consider your piece of property in Brooklyn to be not the biggest, not the smallest, sort of a intermediate size. And you put up a 160-meter antenna, and you're fairly happy with it. And when people find out you're in Kings County, you're in demand. I am curious, how many other guys do you know of in the county of Brooklyn, Kings County, who are on 160 meters? How many of them are there? Is your best guess, Mel? Go ahead.
I know no one. I've run across anyone else. I have asked a number of people that are local, what bands do you operate? You know, just a small number of them will say from up to whatever. But never say 1/6 range of the antenna. Notice also, that's another question I will say with this. I think I may be in county.
Okay, the next question is, how close is your nearest 160 neighbor? You have to go over to New Jersey or Queens or Nassau. Where's the nearest guy you know of on 160 to you?
A number of them come on upstate New York, out in Long Island. I don't buy operating out there. The rest of them say, I believe, 160 meter tennis situation charged a lot of hams. Don't think that experiment with too many. Find that, put it this way, the average size lot of land, and I cannot picture any people have on your own property if you don't have cooperation to may possibly put anything.
Okay, K2KEY on Dover Street in Brooklyn is on 160. He do it by extreme craftiness. Can other people do it if they desire it hard enough, high enough? If their desire is high enough, can they do it? I'm pretty sure the answer is yes. I'd like to believe you haven't broken any of the laws of physics when you did it. And you have a rough guess as to what kind of radiation efficiency you're getting on 160. And if it's as good as I think it is, could you be writing an article as to how you did it, Mel? Give us a couple of words as to how you did it. How did you get on 160? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Magic. I just got a dipole. That's a dipole. I have that on that. I pulled the dipole up approximately. Stretches out 100 directions. Houses over one. Houses the other way. Houses and all, but kid with him. I said, you'll remember. He says, I know nothing about it. Kidding aside, that's the only way. Got it stretched out, Dick. You really can't see it. You know, it's not an eyesore. Because...
Fantastic. Okay, I got a couple of questions for you now. You're a success story. By way of using two properties over to the left and two properties to the right, two properties south, two properties north of you, because I think Dover Street is roughly north-south when I look at it on the map. You've got a successful installation borrowing the land of your neighbors. You're a friendly enough guy that they like you. You've been around long enough. You're not flaky. Well, I'll back off on that one. But they like you and they're willing to support your operation. With good psychology, with good diplomacy, what percentage of the hams do you think are capable of pulling off what you did, and should they be doing it? Obviously, you gotta have a friendly attitude with your neighbors because, to some degree, we live in each other's pocket. You make your next-door neighbor unhappy, I guarantee you're not going to have a nice, simple life. And usually a man is not much bigger than the thing that angers him. You shouldn't get angry at your neighbor because he does something you don't like. You gotta back off a little bit and find out where he's coming from and put yourself in his shoes if you possibly can. See if you can meet him halfway with whatever you're disagreeing about, and how he mows his lawn, or how he cuts the hedge between the two, or is he establishing a new fence, or is he putting a pool in the backyard, or setting up a new garage, whatever. The things that people get angry over sometimes are awfully minor. But what percentage of the hams with good diplomacy do you think can do what you've done? And on top of that, this nice green wire, although we have very few ice storms, thank goodness, and my guess is with an ice storm, it might get damaged, but it's not very expensive, and replacing it is not very difficult. Am I correct in some of these guesses, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW?
The
Why, so far it's survived the weather up. I got the big 72 feet wires and everything. A lot of wires here, but I got very interesting pictures. Not eyesores, in other words, not trees to cut, you know, branches or anything else. That bar is pulling it off. Well, I wonder sometimes if I had a neighbor in a lighthouse and all that, they are, I really depend on. No storm outcomes, my snow, number of things that. Got a small little community here. I live here at Dover. It's not like a little community here. And I don't think you're going to find too many of these. Better be frowned upon. Real quick chances, you know, and try to do a sneak. That would be pretty difficult to do with fire, to tell you the truth.
Okay, so I guess the next question then, Mel, is that if you were one of these guys that, because the sunspot cycle is at the minimum and you really want to use 160 meters, the band that you think has got a lot of capability, the current magic band, and without the help of your neighbors, two houses on each side, you believe you could establish a medium performance antenna on 160 on your property without the help of the neighbors? Go ahead.
Well, from what I've heard, that nobody's ever had, really. I mean, these guys have even tried mobile. You know, it depends on what you want to do. What I really, most of the time, have been, is my primary interest, you know, a lot of these bands. And now, the very weak signal I can make contact with our peace station. How low, weak a signal can I make intelligent copy of, out of? Any kind of these horseshoe compromised antennas, I'm not going to do a heck. What I was really trying to accomplish at the time is do the best camera with what I have. But again, on 160 basic ice, of course, somewhat resonate. It's going to ring. I don't think you're going to get on there, and some of the Europeans I've worked with doubt very much if you're going to really with the compromised antennas.
Okay, there's obvious interest in 160, obvious by the mail you're getting. So tell us a little bit about, with your four-home dipole, I'm going to call it, using the adjacent properties of four houses, springing this nearly invisible piece of green wire. With that as an antenna on 160, and I'm not quite sure, but I'm going to guess you've got it, portions of it 70 feet in the air, 60 feet in the air. Tell me what 160 is like. Does the band open up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you occasionally hear Europe or Australia? When does it open? What do you hear? How many watts are you running? Describe 160 for us, Mel. You're one of the rare guys we know on 160. You're successful at it. So tell us what 160 is like on Dover Street. K2KEY, K2RIW.
The only way to describe it, it's a strange... So you'd never expect it to do. I am now, you know, there was a lot of controversy. Let's back up. There was a lot of controversy whether or not Marconi actually was able to... that experiment that he did back, what was it, around his, what I've seen 162 sounds like a possibility that he was able to do. His equipment, he made harmonics, God knows where the harmonics. One time, of course, amateur radio, and the hams will never get out of their backyard. 160, there are times that you live, times where bottom of the lowest side group with good 5.5, 5.6, 9 contact, and the band, you don't hear anything, sounds kind of unusual.
Okay, sounds like a fun band. It sounds like you combined 160 with 80, 40, 20, 15, 10, and the so-called walk bands that, as an HF person, can have a lot of fun. Talk to some nice people, study what Mother Nature does when the band opens. Can you predict it? Not always. Combine that with VHF and UHF and an awful lot of low-tech, high-tech, whatever you like. There's 26 different kinds of ham radio. The one that gives you the most amount of pleasure. Some people think you're only going to go around once. Make it a good one. For other people who believe there's an afterlife and this one doesn't count. I'm not so much in acceptance of that one. You got to make this one count. So, sounds like you've made a moderate investment in 160. From your point of view, it's paying off. And if a new ham came along, said, I'm going to go get my general class license, and I want to be on 160. Tell him, hey, you're going to enjoy it, or these are the caveats. What would you tell a new guy who wants to get on 160, Mel? Say, that should be the first band, the second band. He's going to enjoy it. He's going to have to work hard. It's not going to work all the time. What would you tell a new ham about 160? You've been there. You've done it. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Actually, if to understand EDO time. Look at 80 wide open and find an engine. I could almost tell you it's a vice versa Vandal Wyatt. And times when that's... Now, after sunset, usually up there, nothing's really doing place that we are. But now you take a listen, you're hopping along. Take a listen to 160. Well, gee, I'm listening, you know, and I'm going to put steady F up at 160. Can't hear really much on it. It's encouraging at times. You've got to mix it, like you say. I cover the whole section, 160, 10 gigs, basically. It's a matter of you know, working what we got, Dick.
RSO with a comment. Mr. RSO, go right ahead, Frank. Dick, going back to the original question, I believe, was what type of antenna would be best suited for 160 meters in an area in which there's not that much property. In my opinion, some form of wire loop antenna would be my first choice, whether it be vertical or horizontal, depends on the number of, and type of trees that are available. And it could be a delta loop, it could be a square loop. And if the wire is not long enough for 160 meters, just double it up. Form a spiral, form two or three turns of that loop. We've seen these loop antennas being very effective, well, during Second World War. The AM transmitters all used diamond-shaped loop antennas for direction finding and other things for the war effort. But anyway, basically a loop, that would be my first choice, and with a good antenna tuner, should be able to do quite a bit on a 160 and other bands. Back to that N2RSO.
Yeah, I did that. I'll tell you the story of that.
Yeah, Frank, I sense that you are on 160. Describe it from your point of view. Have you and Mel talked on 160? Over to you first, Frank. Go ahead. I may have, Dick. I was on a net one evening. I don't remember whether it was 160 or 80. I did say hello to Mel on that that net. But I have not been on it lately. And I was able to get on it using my rhombic, which was basically terminated into a loop at one point. We're talking about 40 feet on each leg, so a total length of approximately 160 feet with a good antenna tuner. And, yes, I've worked it, and not the greatest antenna to use, but capable.
If a new ham came to you and said, gee, Frank, I've been hearing about 160. Sounds kind of exciting. Should it be my first, second, or third band that I start equipping for? If a new ham asked you that question, what would your response be, Frank?
Given the solar cycle and the propagation, I would probably say third choice. First choice would probably be 40, second choice 80, and third choice 160.
Okay, so you're working your way down from the upper to the lowers. Let's see, would you make a similar recommendation in a low sunspot cycle? 40, 80, 160, in that order? K2KEY, K2LIW?
KEY, well, 40 is fairly consistent, but I would basically 60. I have tried, you know, I've tried feeding that fire together, and I've tried feed them in a number of different ways on 160 or that loop. Yes, I can get it to work, but in Paris, when I dipole up, definitely that dipole 160, if I could possibly arrange to definitely hear it, you know, you can just get the background noise comes up about that a dipole, you know, dipole again, you know, dipole over.
Okay, occasionally your mic is dropping out, but I'll let you know about that. Not too much, but you have to squeeze a little bit harder. I think you and I are very close to the same wavelength here, Mel, and that is thoroughly balanced antennas, like a dipole, seem to give you and me a lot more bang for the dollar, a lot more reliability. We like them better. And the low altitude and ground plane radio requirement of a quarter wave or whatever vertical ground plane antenna
you're not as much in a favor of it. A new ham, looking at these shiny doodad things with all kinds of coils and whatever on one of these antennas, properly advertised, it's an exciting-looking structure. And a simple dipole is not an exciting-looking structure. It looks like a poor man's antenna, a dipole. And therefore, I can see how a new ham can easily be thinking that, gee, the only people using a dipole are the ones that can't afford something better. I can afford something better. So I'm saying it. I think you're saying it. Push for balanced antennas first, and don't go for unbalanced antennas, particularly not the first step out of the box. See if you agree with that. K2KEY, K2LIW.
K2QIQ.
Glenn recognized, but Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
Yes, hello. I've got a lot of emails here asking which vertical, or any verticals, that you would prefer. And I really believe you got to stick. Put up dipoles. Well, first of all, a fraction of the cost, have a support they put up in a way that they are not obtrusive in anybody's hard time as to what that type of routine. I think basically take any of those dipoles by view. I will say that I'm going to get a lot of flack on this. They're going to tell me there are many verticals, these commercial verticals, a number of them that are sold that will work, outperform a dipole. But I think if you take a dipole and vertical dipole or somewhat of a sloper, I think it will perform as good for the way whatever kind of contraption, say, verticals that have come on the market in the last few years. Some ridiculous claims, but I have a feeling in comparison to a dipole that they're not going to outperform it. My opinion, Dick, over.
That's what I thought you were going to say. And we're going to hear what Glenn's got to say about this, because he's put up quite a few antennas in his backyard. And by the way, Glenn, Mel and Dick were both sure we were going to go to the convention today that was held in Levittown Hall, and we were going to tap you on the shoulder and say all kinds of fancy things to you, but independently, Mel wasn't able to make it, I wasn't able to make it, so you also give us a couple of words as to what the flea market was like, because I'm reasonably sure you were there. KC2QIQ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, it was actually a very fun experience today. Met a lot of people that I've spoken to, over the year or so, and got a chance to meet a few new faces there. And I didn't wind up buying anything. Said hello to Andy. I was actually up on the stage there where Andy was testing a lot of transceivers and things. We had a little bit of discussion about Doppler antennas and the like, and relatively a good time. Let me clear the machine for a minute, and I'll add my comment to what I had about the antenna, unless you have another comment about the MS first.
You got it.
I was just going to suggest that while I was listening to you talk about 160, I do have 160 set up here. I don't use the band very often, but I do listen there a lot, and I can transmit on it. And what I use, it's a kind of Maverick antenna, is I have a 20-meter dipole, center-fed, but it's standing up vertical. And what I found actually improves the performance is by driving ground rod in on the bottom leg and grounding the bottom leg of the antenna at ground level, and then going up, roughly about 20 feet, feeding it in the center, and then have the other 20-foot section going up. So it's really a pole that's standing about 40 feet tall, center-fed, and grounded on the bottom. And I use an antenna tuner inside the shack here, and I tune 160 on it, and I could actually play for you right now, 160 AM on 1875 right now, and it comes in gangbusters. And I don't think that's a very difficult antenna to use, and I'm not sure how efficient it is exactly, but it certainly gets out there, and depending on propagation, I hear just about everything.
For the people who do like vertical antennas, the closer you get to a half wavelength electronically for the radiator, I'm convinced the more and more performance you get. The nice thing about a half wavelength radiator is it's like a half wave dipole, but you're feeding the end instead of the center. You're feeding the end that's got something like 2,000 ohm impedance. When you're feeding a 2,000 ohm impedance, you might get away with a single ground rod in the ground, as opposed to 32 radials a quarter wavelength long. The antenna becomes a lot more forgiving, and the antenna has a higher phase center. In other words, the phase center is more feet above the ground, so you get multiple benefits. You've moved the ground, the feed point above the ground. You're moving in the direction of electronic half wave, is what I'm hearing. So under those circumstances, I think you're saying that a ground plane-like antenna can be a hell of a lot higher in performance than a pure quarter-wave thing fed with 32 ground plane radials as a counterpoise. See if you agree or disagree with any of that, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and it's something that there's been a few people who've asked me about 160-meter antennas, and it's something that I've pointed out to them. You know, the only key thing to that is, like you said, is you have to ground that bottom element with like a little with a 10-foot ground rod, and the only other trick to it is just feed it with something other than coax. Make sure you're using like a ladder line feed coming back into the shack. You know, 400, 600 ohm, whatever you know the standard stuff is, and you know, running on the back of a good antenna tuner, and I don't think you'll have a problem at all. It's probably not going to be as efficient as Mel's, full-length dipole, but I mean, certainly if you want to get your feet wet on 160 meters, I don't think it would take very long to actually set up a 20-foot pole on the bottom, and if you lean it and bolt it up against the side of the house, and then just bolt the next 20-foot section, isolating it in the center and going up, I don't think it's a very difficult structure to put together, and you're on 160. You know, and you figure a typical ranch house with dormer on it, it usually stands pretty close to 18 to 20 feet, so bolting the pipe right next to the house is pretty easy. Like you.
And give us a couple of words as to what 160 is like for you, Glenn. How long you've been there? How much you like it? When does the band open? Can you predict when it's going to open? Like the people you talk to, like the DX you're getting. Give us a few words as to 160 from your point of view, and how long have you been there? You got it, Glenn.
Well, I have to be honest, I'm not a big 160 guy. What happened was there was some friends of mine that were listening to the Marconi net on 80 meters, and they were moving their net on certain nights over to 160. And the same question that was posed to Mel was posed to me. How do you do it? You know, and especially with a lot of these properties here on Long Island, they're pretty small. And I was like, let me give it a shot and see what we can do, you know, tuning up different antennas and see what we come up with. And the only thing I started to get that was giving me any kind of performance that started to work was, you know, a 20-meter dipole, you know, standing vertical. And then I found by grounding the bottom end of that element at the ground level, wow, what a difference that made just using an antenna. And, you know, I've used it a couple of times, but most of the time, I have to admit, from my house, I'm not talking to Europe. It's usually guys in New Jersey, Riverhead, Long Island. There's a few guys here in Nassau that are on a few nets down there, too. A few stations in Connecticut, I have to admit. Connecticut, New Hampshire are up there. I'll hear a few guys down in, South New Jersey and Virginia. So, I mean, there's a group of guys that come on and off, but it's not a big popular band for me, at least anyway. It's like 80 is, 75 meters, where I can always key up and, find somebody there that knows me, KC2QIQ.
Glenn, the people on 160 say they are top banders. They are on the top band because they're thinking wavelength, not frequency. You said down there. The top banders, don't they say up there? Over to you, Glenn.
No, I think everybody says down below, Dick. It's a real crazy band. And the wintertime, I find it to be a little bit better. In the summertime, with lightning storms and things like that, I find the band is, I don't know if it's a function of my antenna or not, if I had a full dipole, whether it would be any better or not, because I've never really had a perfect antenna for 160. But I think between the static crashes and everything, it just becomes a very, very difficult band to handle and hear anything, because you might have a QSO going for a little while, and if there's a thunderstorm anywhere, 160 meters will find it, KC2QIQ.
Sounds like that's one way of knowing when the band is open. You can hear the thunderstorms from a zillion miles away. Okay, you want to continue talking about 160? It's your choice, Mel, or do you want to go to another mailbag recipient, submitter? K2KEY,
K2RIW. This is K2KEY. Well, I'll wait for the emails to come in and questions about 160. Here's another email I was looking at that a young person, I guess. Electronic technology. Actually, I listen to TechNet all the time, and I use it for reference. And I once gave the formula that you were L equals 533 divided by frequency squared times capacitance. Go this to my teacher, and he wants to know, how did I come up with the figure 533? Have you ever used that formula, Dick?
No, I have not, Mel, so I can't back you on this one, sorry to say. Go ahead.
Formula is actually derived from L This is, again, back to Brooklyn Tech, I guess. Some of the old timers, you know, they didn't have calculators in those light rules and all. So they used to know how to simplify a lot of the formulas. One that modified, I remember it from back a lot of years, comes from L equals 1 over, which you, Mikey, will recognize, 1 over 2 pi, actually, 1 over, or 1 divided by brackets, 2 pi times S, the frequency, close brackets, squared times C. I stated that correctly. Am I correct, Dick, the primary formula for inductance over?
I think what it is a resolution of the frequency equals 1 over 2 pi square root of LC. And if I rearrange and do some squaring to get rid of the square root sign, I think you're going to come up with this one. And I believe the L has to be in, is it microhenries and capacitance and microfarads? You might tell us the units that makes this work, Mel. Go ahead.
That's because it's in microhenries. So that's original, that formula, that frequency, know your capacitance. Now you can determine your inductance. Basically, it's the dots that used to be, but you know, remember the old dots that they used to have that you could cross if you know the frequency approximate inductance. But if you wanted to get it precisely, you L equals 1 divided by the pi F squared times C. So what I did, or what they tech at the time I learned, it pulled 2 pi square out, so that 2 pi squared, the pi squared, well, I think it would come out, the figure was 39 point, I haven't got my calculator. I don't remember off the top of my head, it would be 39.47, something like that. Around 39.5, I remember, 2 pi. Is that 2 pi squared, Dick, quick?
2 pi squared is 39.48. You're absolutely right.
Mine's still working. Okay, if I take that and I rearrange, so in other words, I'm going to pull 2 pi squared out of this formula. Now, being we're dealing with microhenry, we're dealing with 10 to the 6th power, basically. Take 10 to the 6th power, and we divide it by this 39.5, 2 pi squared, we will come out with 25.30. So now we got the formula. So now we sort of simplified this formula that L now 25.330 divided by the frequency squared times the capacitance will give you the inductance. In other words, it's basically what you would found in those charts. What they used to chart. Do they still print those charts, Dick? Do you remember they have them for determining, you know, reactants and all that? I don't think they're in the books anymore. Am I correct?
You're talking about the reactance chart, and I think the reactance chart is in the first couple of chapters of every single issue of Handbook for Radio Amateur. If they drop that, I would be surprised. I'll bet you if you look in your first couple of chapters of the latest issue, it's going to be there. And now I see where it came from. I'm a little bit surprised that the professor didn't recognize. It is just a rearrangement of 1 over 2 pi square root of LC, where your L is in microhenries, and as you see in microfarads or picofarads, Mel, go ahead.
PF, what are you saying? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that says microfarads.
Yes.
And I looked in the handbook. I got the handbook right here. I said that. I said, let me see. Maybe you're right. You know what? Not in the handbook. Not there. I don't know, buried somewhere in there. Used to be in the first, I could say, few pages. I don't see it. For some reason, this stuff here. Of course, I gave you also, I remember, I gave you three different versions, you know, to solve for frequency or accidents or inductance by using this 25.330. I guess it's not widely known, Dick. That's the bottom line, that they figure out how I came up with this figure. That he says it's not a viable way of doing it. I don't see what's wrong with it. To me, it sounds very straightforward, over.
No, I think you're standing on bedrock, Mel. It is just it's a more convenient form of 1 over 2 pi square root of LC. The average person wanted to find out what size microhenries would be required, would be doing cut and try with that formula because he wouldn't know how to rearrange it. Many guys are not quite mathematically skilled enough, and here you've done that for them. I'm a bit surprised the prof didn't recognize it. He obviously didn't spend very much time, or he wasn't too familiar. Now, the early issues of the early chapters of the Radio Amateur's Handbook, for years and years, have always had a section that tells you what is inductance, what is capacitance, How do you design a Pi network? Are you telling me all of those theory sections have been dropped? How recent is your radio amateur's handbook that has dropped the reactance chart and those sections explaining what is inductive reactance, what is capacitive reactance, and so on?
Three.
Ooh, I forgot about the fact that we thought the other...
Keeps some purpose. The men of the past who lost purpose.
But in Dallas, they don't have that problem. Everybody in Dallas has got the goal in mind, right straight forward, they're focused. Is that true, KIVJB and the group, K2LIW? I am curious, Ken, what process are you using? A little bit of static in the background. I'm guessing you're using some kind of link to get into a local repeater that gives up the zode by which you're getting to us. Is that approximately it? And static that we're hearing, is that on the uplink between you going into, or are you going directly into a port of some kind? And if so, where's the static coming from? I vaguely remember now Eric telling me that a link they've got between these two Long Island repeaters, that's where the static is coming from. You're innocent. How about you, Ken?
Negative on that, Dick. The static is coming from you also. Sheldon has a bad antenna, I think, because I can't hit the thing with an H.
Yeah, I'm hearing that static. I'm getting a signal strength I'm getting from the local repeater. It's banging my needle on the right-hand side. 1 watt, 30 watts. My guess is you didn't hear anybody here with the 30-watt level versus the 1-watt level. There's just a link somewhere that's creating the noise. They look like it's input to the machine, but I'm not so sure.
N1Y and
over to you, Joe, and then you pass it to Kent. 2RYY in the group, K2RIW.
Okay, transmit now on... I'm listening direct on 375. I want to see what your signal sounds like again directly. I was listening on the internet before.
Okay, I'm transmitting on the input to the 375, which is 975. Static on me on the inside.
Yes, I am. It's on the repeater directly itself. Now, his echo link is an uplink, I think, coming from the cellular or something like that, from what Eric did last time this guy was on here. He's hearing the static on the uplink signal from the cellular repeater. That's how it's coming in. That's transmitting actually into the cellular repeater.
Okay, Joe, how are you getting into this system right now? And can Kent do the same thing? Over to you, Joe.
Yeah, it's called build an IRLP node, and he can connect to reflector 9126, and he would be full client with you, and he'd also wouldn't have a time delay like Echolink. It's a, you know, far superior system. I'm coming in on IRLP. I'm coming in from my node onto the 9126 reflector. That's how I'm going. That's the same reflector that ties east and west repeaters together for Limark.
So, Kent, do you have the ability to come in that way? Over to you, Kent. I think the call letters of this repeater is APQ. Is that true, Joe? Go ahead.
I'm not sure what the gentleman's asking for information. Node that this East repeater's on is 4478. Node that Glen Oaks is on is 4438. Those two are both tied to a IRLP reflector called 9126. They're linked together. I'm coming on the same system. So it's like a round table type of thing. Only one of us can talk at a time. That's why the high band from Glen Oaks can take me out on the IRLP. Coming out on Echolink, which is going up from his point in Texas up to a someplace in Sayville, and that's being turned into RS to location. And I also know it's directly connected to the reflector on RS to
Welcome to the New England Reflector, 912.
Channel 6.
Hi. So you got a beam that's only a foot and a half, 12-foot dish. That was a learning experience. Let's see, IWWA5.
I've heard the name, Cisco. Why am I having trouble remembering who and what they are? Cisco. Huh. All of a sudden, I'm having trouble placing them. I've heard the name. Who and where are they, Ken? Cisco owns Linksys, place that makes routers. Oh yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, Eric? Yes, it does seem quieter on your signal. And Joe's going to be quiet. Let's see how Ken sounds. Let's see if the V5VJB is noisy. K2RIW listening. Still hearing a little bit of noise on him, Eric, even though I don't hear noise on you or Joe. There was a Feldman antenna damaged by lightning or weather or something like that. Is that why it's being replaced? Yep, 141 is not very close to 147.9 or 0.6, 0.375. Oh well, I'm going to be moseying along. Because I still kind of set my watch to daylight saving time. I think I asked you the question, Ken. Does Texas have daylight saving time? And if so, when do you guys switch over? Right now, it's an hour later today than it was yesterday at this time, if you know what I mean. You got it, Ken.
Last I heard, part of Indiana, state of Arizona, we switched, what, 21 hours ago?
Okay, you're on the new time. I'm going to leave you guys, and I think we've solved enough of the... we haven't solved anything. I was going to say, we've solved enough of the Earth problems tonight. K2RIW are you listening? Hey, Eric, if you and I really have a talk, as opposed to these 3 hours every Sunday night, what subject would we talk about that's so earth-shattering? Yeah, you guys have been doing a lot of pledging, I guess. Is that going to slow down in the next couple of days, or is that going to continue? My guess is a certain percentage of your backers, funders, and endowment people, some of them were involved with Madoff, and the money has just disappeared. Is that sort of true? Yeah, if somebody asks the question, where did the money go? And they hear, well, it just evaporated. It never really was there. That's not very satisfying. Now, his problem was aggravated by the fact that the economy turned down. But even if the economy was blazing for the next couple of years, couldn't he see the future that this has to come crashing? How did he get himself involved in something that is, my best way of putting it, is short-sighted? I mean, it's hard to justify roaring down the road at 100 miles an hour when you put on your binoculars, you look straight ahead, and you see a brick wall. Over to you. Yeah, there wasn't no one watching the store is certainly a factor. But Mr. Madoff is not a dumb guy. How did he talk himself into thinking he can keep doing this indefinitely? Yeah, I had the impression he was not putting any of the money really into the market at all. And so where was the gain supposed to be coming from other than just keep finding new contributors? it doesn't add up to his amount of money. So he couldn't be invested. It's amazing that that kind of information was being brought to the SEC, and for years they ignored it. Yeah, many of his clients, many of his customers, were saying that the monthly statements, whenever they stared at them, they couldn't understand it. But the gain seemed to be there, and they were afraid to ask any questions. Too good to be true. Most of the time, it's too good to be true. I gotta go away. Bye-bye, you guys. You broadcast people, you can stay up real late. The rest of us working folks, I gotta get some shut-eye. Beauty sleep. 73 to all. KQLIW.
Thrill factor that you're not this many private adrenaline. You did have some money, but, well, there's a real thrill factor in doing that. Oh, well. Now that's about the only thing you can negotiate. I can say good night. You guys can say good morning.
I'll bet you he's not going to serve the rest of his life. He'll serve some time, but not the rest of his life. Nobody died. It's a white-collar crime. And he's a slightly privileged individual. You wait and see.
Dick, did you happen to catch the clip on 60 Minutes about a week or two ago on Harry Markola, I think Markola, a Greek guy, did a piece on him. They interviewed him. He, the guy who blew the whistle on him.
Yeah, bye-bye, Kent. And yes, I did see the guy who blew the whistle on him, and he described how many times he went to the SEC with what he thought was irrefutable evidence, and from all he could tell, they were ignoring it or didn't understand it. But apparently, the SEC these days is being run by attorneys that do not have a financial background.
It would seem to me that the government has to spend the money and employ smarter people in the right places, don't you think?
Does sound like you get what you pay for.
And with that, 73s and good night. WHOYY clear, and I'm going to disconnect. Have a good one.
Want them to make a nice decision. That jeopardized W85DJD. Oh, well, we're going to keep having these problems until they make me think.
Flector 9126, link clear.
Idle auto connect enabled. Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the New England Reflector 912.
Channel connected. At 8:30. At 8:30. 120 from the W. At 8:30. Morning. The time 5 a.m. At 8:30.
Girl. Morning, Greg. How are you? WTO, HTV. How you doing? Yippee, yippee, yay.